We're back with more badass liberal talk. Bart Cop Radio.
Okay, I got a ghost story for you here. A week ago, Mrs. Bart said she wanted to go to a haunted hotel for her birthday, and she often gets what she asks for. So we drove a couple hundred miles over to Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and we stayed at the famous Crescent Hotel. Really old and spooky hotel. This hotel was built in 1886, so it's seen parts of three centuries. And it's a nice hotel. It's kind of like what you'd expect for a really old hotel if you've been in one. And we had heard the rumors that it was haunted. But we had no idea how haunted this building was. Okay, so we check in. Got an old fancy room. Thank God they had bathrooms in the room. We stayed at one hotel in Colorado. It seems like it was the Stater in Durango. They have a bathroom down the hall, which is kind of interesting. I mean, in a way, it was kind of fun, like, ooh, it's just like Maverick in the Old West, but, you know, that doesn't fly very far. So we had actually indoor plumbing in this hotel. Okay, so we get all put together, and she runs into town, does her shopping, all that. The big spook show starts at 8. And she was really looking forward to it, because, like I say, it's a little spooky, you know. Nobody believes in the spooky stuff, but... it would be unwise to shut doors, if you know what I mean. So, the big spook show is supposed to start at 8 o'clock. On the way there, we got a harbinger. Is that what you call that? We stayed in, I forget what room, we were towards the end of the hall. And as we're walking toward the elevator to get to the spook fest, well, it's a ghost tour, I shouldn't call it a spook fest. We walked by room 319. No, it was 318. And there was a very, very loud hissing noise coming from inside the room. And there was smoke or vapor or steam or something coming out from underneath the door. And there were several people in the hall, and it made a really, really, really loud noise, so you couldn't help but notice it. And I could tell by body language that one of the fellows that was standing there, he apparently was a room or two down, so he dashed to his room, and by his body language, we deduced that he was calling the front desk, so we stopped worrying about it. So he went on to the ghost tour, and the ghost tour was really nice. I started out with this guy. He was all kinds of nuts, and he had a horrible voice, and I knew this wasn't going to work. But the tour was supposed to last an hour and a half, and this guy not only had a bad voice, but he was speaking stupid. You know, whenever you take one of these ghost tours, they try to tie a little science into it. They try to tie a little legend into it. You know, they tell you things like Einstein said that all energy still exists. It just transforms. So if you're a human being and you die, that energy is still there according to Einstein. Now, who's going to stand up and call Einstein a liar? So they're preparing us all this for the tour. But this idiot that started the show, he's telling us things like, there was once a man who had a dream that he was a butterfly. And when he woke up, he wondered if he was a man that had a dream about being a butterfly or if he was a butterfly with a dream about being a man. It's like, hey, asshole, I can't do an hour and a half of this. You're going to have to start speaking some kind of sense or this isn't going to work. Fortunately, after a few minutes, he said, I'm going to turn things over to this other lady. Don't remember her name. She was probably 45. Seemed to be very knowledgeable about the hotel. Okay, so we started walking around. And apparently they had many different tours kind of in their repertoire. They don't want to tell you the same stories each time because they want repeat business on the tours. And let's say there's 30 stories. Well, they'll tell you 6 or 8 of them as you walk around the hotel. They say, oh, see this room here? We had a lady. And it was interesting how they would put the burden of proof on the unknown reporter. They would say, a lady from Fort Smith was here one time, and she said this happened. And a couple was here from Kansas City one time, and they told us, oh, like one deal, they said there was this ghost, Michael, who was always into the mischief. And they said, well, what kind of mischief? Well, you know, the lights would blink on and off, which can be electrical problems. It's an old hotel. But they said, like, once this couple checked in, oh, they were from Chattanooga. You know how you get specific. And they went into the room, and whatever, dropped their bags and ran to eat lunch. When they came back, the bathtub had overflowed. And they said, well, that must be Michael playing a prank because, you know, had they gone into the bathroom or turned, you know, maybe they forgot to turn the water off, whatever. But no, they said they opened the door, put their bags inside, closed the door. When they came back, the bathtub had flooded, so they thought it was Michael playing tricks. Michael was a Mason from Ireland that died in the hotel in 1885, the year before it opened. He fell off the roof and fell into what was now room 218. So that's Michael's room, 218. If you go to the Crescent Hotel, get 218, because that's where the ghost of Michael is. Anyway, so they had lots of this and that. At one time, you know, she told us that sometimes, you know, the ghosts, they walk through walls and they do this. And it's kind of creepy, you know, if you kind of let yourself, as I always say about it, if you go to the Superman movie and you tell yourself constantly, Superman can't fly, nobody can fly, there is no Superman, there's no such thing as Krypton. You know, if you constantly tell yourself that, you're not going to enjoy the movie. So you kind of suspend a little bit, you kind of let go, you kind of put the facts to the side and kind of go along with the ride. And that's what we did for this. But it turns out there was, I'm not saying there was real spooks, but we had no idea what kind of haunting we were taught. We thought, ooh, it's a haunted place. But turns out the history of the place is right out of Nazi effing Germany. Oh, my God. We had no idea when we got there what we were getting into. Now, if you believe in ghosts, you know how Owen Poltergeist, they built their house on the ancient burial grounds where the Indians never got their fair break in life and this and that. So the Poltergeist house was haunted. Well, if there is such a thing as ghosts, this Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas is Grand Central, and let me tell you why. It was built, like I say, in 1886. I think they said it was $250,000, which is a lot of money in 1886. And it went up and down in value. It would fall into disrepair. And one fellow, the fellow I'm about to tell you about, his name is Norman Baker. He bought it for $40,000 in 1937 and had it for 3 years. Now, what he did with that hospital is just almost unspeakable, but I'm going to tell you, you're big people, you're adults, you can take this. And the more you know about Dr. Joseph Mengele, good friend of Prescott Bush and Adolf Hitler, the more you'll appreciate this nutty Norman Baker. What he did, he opened what he called, whatever, the foolproof cancer hospital in 1937. He guaranteed, now, yeah, it's the old Nancy Grace guarantee, that he could cure anybody of cancer. Anybody, doesn't matter how bad you had the cancer, doesn't matter how long you had it, doesn't matter how near death you were, he guaranteed, Nancy Grace guaranteed that he was going to cure your cancer. So the rich and the dying and the scared people from all over the world, or at least all over the country, went to Eureka Springs to get their guaranteed cure. And this is back, I guess, before laws were in place, before the Democrats put the laws in place to protect the people that Bush is currently dismantling. But these people went there for the guarantee. And I don't know all the details, but bottom line, thousands and thousands of people came there for the guarantee. And what this crook would do, he was a crooked, evil bastard, but what he would do, somehow you checked in by yourself. He didn't, you know, your family didn't come with you. So you check in by yourself, and the first thing he had you do was write 3 undated letters saying, things are going great, but I need more money. Send a bunch right now. And he had these undated letters signed in their file. And he would check these people in, and they would never check out. So let's say you got Bob. Bob shows up. Bob's got brain cancer. Bob's going to be dead in 90 days. And they all knew this, and they knew their quackery was just a giant hand job, but they're stealing money on a BFEE almost scale back then. So these millionaires check in, and they start doing things to them. They start giving them odd concoctions. They told us one thing, this guy, oh my God, this was so horrible, that he would, if you had brain cancer, he would drill a hole in your head and put weird stuff. I mean, you figure if you're going to screw a guy, why not just screw him halfway? If I'm an evil cancer doctor and I'm out to steal money, oh, plus he wasn't even a doctor. Shows you how things were before the liberals took over. So this guy, he drills holes in your head if you got brain cancer, and he doesn't put something in your head like, you know, vitamin C or something that might help. No, he was putting in watermelon seeds and, you know, pepper, just the weirdest, nuttiest things in the world that he's putting inside these people's brains. So, yes, obviously they got infected and they died. And so what did he do? There's 4 floors. it would be my guess, he put the sickest people, the people nearest to death, on a certain floor, and they would die. And he would say, oh, so-and-so, he got a whole lot better, and he went home. Actually, what he would do is die, and they would take his body down in the basement and either cremate it or give it to the, you know, a mass grave somewhere. So the spook end of this story comes from the hundreds or thousands of people who were massacred. They said this doctor was so evil, he would transplant deer parts onto men. And the people in the tour going, excuse me, can you run that sentence by us again? He said he would transplant parts from deer onto these people. Here, these dying, desperate, rich people will do anything for a cure, and the doctor comes in and he's going to put doe parts inside here, deer parts, whatever. And the people had no, what did they know? The doctor said you got to do this to live, and they want to live, so they did what the doctor said. Another thing, they said he would perform live autopsies on these people. If someone was very near death, he would just, you know, someone dying of lung cancer, he'd cut them down the middle and look to see what lung cancer looked like while it was still beating, you know, the heart still beating and the cancer still moving or whatever cancer does. And so this guy was performing these impossible atrocities on dozens or hundreds or thousands of people. There's no records. Towards the end, when they found out, they took all the records out and they burned some, and there's supposed to be a big secret involved. They finally put this guy on trial in Little Rock, but all the transcripts from the trial are unavailable or they're missing or something like that. But anyway, this guy was just truly just a monstrously evil dude. So that's where the spook house comes in, with all of these hundreds of people who are massacred and their spirits can't go on, etc., etc. Anyway, so real nice, fun tour. They take us down the hall, and they say, oh, in this room here, this is what happened in this room here. And you go, ooh, you know, and then this is what happened in this room. And then you go to the next floor and stand in this room, and this happened and that happened. And, you know, they kind of build up the thing. Then they take us downstairs in the basement. This is where the bodies were disposed of. And they're saying, you might smell a whiff of formaldehyde or maybe some feces or some urine, because this is where the horrible stuff happened. This is where the worst of the worst. And Mrs. Bart's leaning on this table. And the lady finally says, and that was the autopsy table right there. Oh, she jumps off the table, and there's this old, dirty metal table sitting there with a big hole in the front where the blood and the juices and that runs out during the autopsy. And they say, okay, and that's the end of the tour. Thanks for coming. Another thing they told us about, they said, take lots of pictures because the spooks show up on the pictures. So I took a lot of, you know, I got my little digital camera, so I took a bunch of pictures. And, yes, there are these little, she called them orbs, but to me, they're imperfections in the film or something. I don't know. You take a picture of someone standing there, and lo and behold, above the person's head to the right, there's a little white kind of a circle, and they're calling those spirits, whatever. And, you know, they don't look like spirits. They look to me like imperfections or funny business, but for some reason, they show up more in digital film than in regular film. And it reminds me, back when I was in the finance business, the owner had a bunch of, because we were in that business, he had jukeboxes, pool tables, he owned a bunch of clubs. One of them was a strip club, and this lady came in one time to make her payment, one of the strippers, and she showed us a bunch of photographs where these orb things were following these girls around. You know, they would take a picture of someone on stage, and behind them, they're, you know, if you kind of look at it a certain way, it looks like a face, you know, that kind of thing. So anyway, I took some pictures. I might put some up. Okay, so the tour's over. You know, thank you. We went back to our room. And this is where the spooky stuff started. And it's a little like the trip to Area 51. We did not see flying saucers, but we saw things that can't be explained. We saw lights in the sky that were moving and stopping and turning in ways that no aircraft I've ever seen can do. You don't see a plane shoot across the sky at the speed of, well, damn faster than any plane ought to be able to, and then stop in the sky, this blinking light. Now, that's not supposed to happen, but we saw it, and I don't think they're flying saucers. I think it was some new aircraft that they haven't needed to reveal yet. So we got back to the room. We had one of these Area 51 moments. Now, we didn't see anything, but we heard the nuttiest things in the world. And I wished I'd had a recorder. You know, you never have a camera or a recorder there when you need it. But me and Mrs. Bart are sitting in this very small area, bigger than a closet. It was just that section of the room. It had a couch and a chair and a little table. So we're sitting there, and we kept hearing these very loud cracking, popping noises that seemed to come from nowhere. And I'm talking about very loud. I can think of two ways to describe this popping sound, and I'm hoping out there that the sound seemed to be coming from the brick wall. And I'm hoping someone familiar with bricks might have some kind of explanation of why a brick might make this noise, but it certainly was inside the room. And two ways to describe it. One, it was such a short, sudden pop or a snap, and it reminded me, if you ever had a, sitting by a fire, if you have a fireplace going, and all of a sudden you hear a pop, and a piece of wood shoots out of the fireplace onto the rug or whatever, you have to go get it. That, you know, psst, just for 1 second, it would do that. Another way to describe it is if you stretched a rubber band across a piece of paper and then picked it up and let it go, and it would snap, you know, just psst, kind of one of these, kind of like that. But anyway, the damn brick wall kept doing that again and again. I remembered about a dozen, and we're talking about so loud that it would stop you mid-sentence. You know, I'm saying, so this guy walks up to me, psst, and these loud snapping noises are coming from basically out of nowhere. And I don't think it's a ghost, but it was real. It was very odd that some loud noise was happening, was apparently coming from nowhere right next to us as we spoke. And it really, really creeped out Mrs. Bart. The whole evening really creeped her out. She told me, I didn't realize this, but she told me when we got back that she slept in her clothes that night. She wasn't about to take her clothes off in this hotel where all these... It wasn't a spook thing so much as it was just so creepy to think that this weird Dr. Mengele, this crazy bastard that was just cutting up people... Oh, and... Sorry to jump around, but, you know, these letters he had these people sign, these people would get very sick and or die, and he'd mail these letters out. Hi, I'm doing great. Send another 10,000. And then he said because of the way the mail worked, maybe 30 days later a check would show up. He'd cash the check and mail another letter. And then 30 days later another 10,000 would show up. And then he'd send that final letter saying, on the brink of being cured, I need, you know, one last big chunk, maybe 20,000. And they'd send that. And then the doctor would mail him a note saying, oh, your mother was doing so good, and at the last minute she died. Do you want us to bury her here? Do you want us to ship her to you? Well, you know, back in the old days, I don't know, the shipping a body 30 days... Maybe, I don't know if they had air conditioning, whatever. A lot of people just said, fine, keep her, bury her, rest in peace. So they said it in the mornings or at midnight, whenever the hearses would show up and just cart these bodies away to Lord knows where. But anyway, this doctor, evil, creepy dude, and it creeped out Mrs. Bart. But I would like to get a little feedback to see what in the world, or maybe in the spook world, there's some kind of a name for this or whatever, but we're talking about, now you know what me, I'm a science and logic guy. I don't believe in the spooks. I don't believe in the hereafter. I don't believe in any of that business. There was nobody trying to contact anybody, but it was just an unexplainable, very loud, snapping, popping noise that seemed to come from nowhere. A couple of hints. It was a cold night. It was probably 35, 40 degrees. Oh, I was telling you about the room at the very beginning. After the spook tour, I went to the front desk and asked them about that. And they said, yes, a tip or a cap or something on the steam radiator had come off. And so, yes, there was a very, very loud hissing noise, and that was steam coming out from underneath the door of the hotel. And our room had, we're on the same floor, just down towards the end of the hall. Our room had central air. So I don't know why this room had steam in it. It's a very, very old hotel, and you see those radiators in the halls and stuff, but I don't know if they were there for whatever reason. We know on the same floor they had some steam, but in our room it was central air. But there was no explanation of why this very... I remembered about a dozen or so, maybe more, 12 or 15 of these. Mrs. Bart remembers maybe 5 or 6, and she said some were singles, some were doubles, kind of a snap, and other ones were just a pop or something. So if anyone has a reason, I mean, and also we weren't scared at all. It was just odd. It was, you know, there's a loud noise, snap, snap, and you look up and there's a brick wall. There's nothing there. There's nothing to explain. The hotel's 100 years old, so we figure there's no settling going on. This place, this part we were in, they said was redesigned maybe, or what do you call it, refurnished in 2002. You know, there seemed to be no architectural or structural reason for the bricks to be making a very, very loud snapping, popping noise out of nowhere. But anyway, that's my spook story. Mrs. Bart doesn't know if she ever wants to go back again. I mean, she's not flipped out and weird about the place. It's just, you know, it was kind of creepy. And perhaps if I am more science and logic than she is, And again, we weren't scared. It was just unusual. It's like seeing something that ought not to be. Some human trick on Letterman. It's like, wow, I can't believe I saw that. Well, this is one of those, wow, I can't believe I heard that, but we did hear it. And that's my spook story from Arkansas. So if you go to Arkansas, Eureka Springs, and the rooms are very reasonable, too. The rooms start low. They're like $60-$70. And you can go up and get the penthouse for $240 or something like that. But very, very nice old hotel, beautiful. Eureka Springs is an odd place anyway. It is so odd. The merchants in town don't take credit cards. We stopped at Michael's Alley, kind of something, which is very strange. You go down three or four flights of steps, and you got this giant wall of rock. They didn't even try to hide it. The Eureka Springs is a giant rock, and it's mountains, and they just had a rock the size of the house inside this restaurant. That was one of their walls, was the giant rock. But these crazies, they don't accept credit cards. They also, there's no cell phone service in the town, so it's a very strange kind of town. They have ATMs. If you see a piece of art in one of the galleries you want to buy, you can go to the ATM, and for whatever that good will do you, I don't use ATMs. But isn't it odd to go in a restaurant, we ordered a burger or whatever, and I gave them my Southwest Visa card, and they said, we don't take that. And I'm going, lady, it's 2004. What do you mean? You're a restaurant, a tourist town restaurant. You don't take credit cards. But they said, nope, we don't do that. So, that's my spooky story. If any of you Masons out there, or any of you spookologists, if anyone has an idea why a solid brick wall would make some very loud, popping, snapping noises, and I can't, like I say, these were crisp noises. It almost sounded like, I don't know if sparks make a sound, I think they do. Like when we were kids, we'd have, you know, the little train, if you put a piece of metal across both tracks, it would go, tsh-tsh. But it was odd. So if you ever find yourself in north central Arkansas and you want to get plenty creeped out, go to Eureka Springs, Arkansas. The Crescent Hotel is the big giant hotel on it's the tallest point in town. And whatever you do, don't stay in room 218. That's where Michael the Ghost is. But yeah, it was a fun tour. It was a plenty creepy place. And the unexplained noises makes not only for a good story, but an honest one. This next piece is a bit that didn't work, but I just felt like it wouldn't hurt to say it, and I couldn't finish it, but what the hell? Not everything works. That's part of life. Going to read you some names and some numbers. Nathan Anderson, 22. Travis Babbitt, 24. Ted Bowling, 25. Dave Caruso, 25. Tom Dorflinger, 20. Peter Giannopoulos, 22. Eric Hodges, 21. Sean Huey, 28. Jared Marr, 21. Here's an odd one. Michael Ottoline, 45. Aaron Pickering, 20. Justin Ripun, 20. Abraham Simpson, 19. Morgan Strader, 23. David Branning, 21. Last one, Brian Medina, 20. They were all killed in Iraq. I read that yesterday, and driving down the street today, I wondered how many of them might have played poker. And say out of 1,000 men who have died in Iraq, and I know there have been women, I'll bet 30 or 40 played the Texas Hold'em poker. Out of 1,000 men like that, wonder how many of them have ever drank some fine tequila. And you think maybe, 50 out of 1,000 people maybe have had the good tequila. I promise 900 of the 1,000, when you ask them what's the good tequila, I promise 9 out of 10 people are going to say Cuervo. I promise. And out of that 1,000, wonder how many of them ever heard the rock band Garbage with Shirley Manson. You figure statistically, probably 200, 250 of them of the 1,000 probably have heard of Garbage or heard a Garbage song. And out of that 1,000, I'll bet you not 10 had ever tried some Bixby Corn. And as important as those things are to me, corn, little garbage, little tequila, playing poker, you know, that's not the important thing, really. Of those 1,000, I wonder how many of them got to have sex before they died. Wouldn't you guess maybe 10% of them might have been virgins? Surely most of them, you figure maybe 900 out of 1,000 were not virgins when they went to Iraq. But how awful to have your life taken from you before you ever even had a chance to have sex. Out of that 1,000, I don't know how many were older. That one fellow's name we read was 45. Let's say 50 out of 1,000 men over there are older. Let's say 40 or older. Wild guess. They might be 2/3. I just don't know. So out of 1,000 dead soldiers in Iraq, maybe 10 got to see their kids grow up. Of the 1,000, wonder how many of them ever got to buy a brand new car. You know, you go buy a brand new car, and even if you go make them a deal and write them a check, they never give you the car that day. You always got to go back the next day, and oh, you're just pins and needles because you want that car so bad. And maybe it's got leather, you can smell the leather, or it's just got that new car smell. But oh, the pride in ownership when you get your first new car. I got my first new car before I was 21. Stupidly, I spent the money on that. But I felt real good. It was a very good feeling to have a brand new car to drive down the street. But out of that 1,000, I'll bet maybe 100 of them ever got to buy a car, a brand new car. Wonder how many out of the 1,000 had as good a meal as we had in Las Vegas with Scary at Morton's Steakhouse. Obviously, a good meal's not that hard to come by. You figure probably 60-70% of them at one time in their life had a very, very damn good steak dinner with all the trimmings. But a lot of them were yet to have that. Out of that 1,000, wonder how many of them ever made it to Vegas. Figure a good percentage of them probably from California, so they might have made it. Maybe what, 15% of the soldiers in Iraq might be from California, so a lot of them made it over, but what the hell, let's pick a figure. 250 of them had made it to Vegas before they were killed. Wonder how many of the 1,000 left a girlfriend or a wife. Figure out of 1,000, let's take a guess, 40% were either married or had a girlfriend, a study relationship. The other 60% hadn't got to that point in their life. Fuck it.
So this is Christmas.